fight,
we win.
That Donald Trump will become the 47th president of the United States.
So you won't hear from the vice president tonight?
Here's how tonight is going to go, and I'm telling you guys this ahead of time so that you'll know when it happens that it was very predictable and it's nothing to be worried about. Trump is going to lose, okay? He does not have the support.
Because I'm thinking about the people who are not a part of anybody's elite who are hurting tonight. There are African-American women who know a little bit about being talked down to and know a little bit about having their economic dreams crushed.
You're talking about the propaganda campaign and the playbook of Trump. This is not new. This is not surprising. This is directly out of Hitler's playbook.
America failed women tonight, primarily.
And where Trump has been convicted of over 30 felonies, he's been responsible for the January 6th insurrection, you could provide a pretty good story for why she won. But she didn't.
You go to the polls with the country that you have, and the country we have lives in two totally separated information ecosystems. Whatever happens, we'll have to really understand the information consumption that young men have and why they think that the economy will be better under Donald Trump when it never was.
I think it's not just on us to stop calling names. I think it's up to him to, as Allison said, with deeds show that he's not going to be those things.
Hello, welcome to Trumpet World. We're very glad to be with you on our second ever live show. We went live earlier on in the morning with Joshua Michels, and what a night, what a day, what a morning. We were planning this and we were preparing this, we're thinking it through, and we were kind of like, well, how soon are we going to know the event? When I wake up here in the UK, are we even going to know the announcements? Are we going to know the results when we have a 9 o'clock live show? Will we even have anything to talk about? We were kind of prepared. I think I talked to our producer, George. We were kind of prepared for me to get up and use the background as a map so we could talk about, well, this battleground state and that battleground state and... well, what does the picture look like, and who's going to win? What are the paths for victory to the different sides? None of that was necessary. It was well before I arrived at work. It was already very clear who had won. I think it was, I don't know, somewhere around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning. Even the New York Times came out and said 95% sure Donald Trump has won this. I mentioned on the morning slot. I was. Kind of wake. I had my iPad by my bedside, and I was waking up every now and again in the night, and I'd have a look and see what the news was like. And it just felt like every time I woke up, it kind of started with Donald Trump is probably going to win, and it became more and more definite with each wake up. So, absolutely crystal clear result. I mean, if we can just ready, George, my screen just so I can see it a bit better. We've got I'll share a couple of graphics with you. I've just been using Decision Desk because they have a clean looking site. I don't know if they're the most unpartisan, say, or bias, but let's go over to the presidential. Just look at the live state of play here, where you can see even in that graph the probability rising through the night. And then at least they, different news sites call it differently. They've got 288 seats, I think, or maybe 86. It's maybe I need glasses. Maybe that's the big revelation from this morning's show. But certainly Donald Trump he's got it there on the Senate, even with the popular vote. I think that's somewhere down. There was somewhere on here I was looking at the results for the popular vote. He's ahead in the popular vote. That hasn't happened for 20 years. That we've had a Republican winning in the popular vote all across the board. The Senate seats, again, in terms of you look at what's in the bag, 52. I need to update the Trumpet Morning Brief. I don't think we've sent that out yet. I had 51 in there last time I checked, but now there's 52 in the bag. So we're looking at a Republican-controlled Senate. I think the House is the one thing where we're maybe not crystal clear at this point. And even there, it's a clear, it's a Republican majority so far, and this is their this decision desk's estimation, at least, where you can see that they were kind of saying, well, it's probably going to be a Republican, then for a while it was probably going to be Democrat. They're calling it at least as probably Republican, but they're not, they're not massively sure about that. But a really decisive result. Back on the earlier show this morning, we put up a tweet from Barack Obama where he was out there saying, well, he tweeted last night, it took several days to count every ballot in 2020. It's very likely we won't know the outcome tonight either. And we know the outcome. That didn't happen. So, I mean, does that tweet indicate that maybe he thought it would go differently, that he had something different planned for the United States? You know, maybe he was expecting things to go on for a whole lot longer, or that he'd have the opportunity to drag it out. So it seems like, you know, things are going very differently for him. So we'll be joined on this segment by Philip Nice and Andrew Miller. I'm not sure. I think I can see Philip ready to go there on the screen. We had Joshua Michels this morning. This morning, I was kind of anticipating we'd have to spend a lot of time breaking this down for you in race by race, district by district. We didn't have to do that. Instead, we had what I thought was a really interesting discussion on Europe's views of Donald Trump. Joshua revealed that one of his relatives wanted him to go and assassinate Donald Trump. That was quite the revelation, but it shows. I mean, I know this, but it still shocked me, the level of hatred in Europe for Donald Trump. So, you know, if you're interested in that and why Europe feels that way, what the impact of a Donald Trump presidency is going to have on Europe, I'd say go back and listen to this morning's. That's mostly what we focused on. I think today we'll talk more about the United States. But I believe, Philip, you're all connected with us.
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yes. Loud and clear. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Did you have any initial thoughts on how this all went and the result that we're looking at this morning?
Right. It is historic. It is. I'm surprised that the victory was convincing enough and substantial enough and by enough of a margin that everybody is accepting, as you were just saying. Everyone is accepting we had an election day. We know the winner, and it's clear that it's Donald Trump. And as more states come in and as that electoral vote count is actually finalized, we'll see just how much of a mandate he has, which, I mean, he already has a mandate. He already has a convincing victory, a historic comeback, but I imagine even more electoral votes will be coming his way, and he'll have a seal of approval by the voters, a mandate that the policies that he advanced during the campaign are in fact what they want, and it's obviously shaking the establishment that's been in there, the liberal establishment. You mentioned Europe there. I just thought I'd throw this in. There was an interesting Politico article that talked about America's embassies in Europe. Maybe Josue even mentioned this. I don't know. But they had all canceled their election watch parties. The ones in like London, I think it was London, Berlin, you know, the largest European countries. They canceled the election watch parties because of what happened last time. Because in 2016, they were all getting ready to celebrate Obama handing the baton over to Hillary Clinton, and that didn't happen. And the all the reactions that you see from liberals on TV, that's how our diplomats were reacting in front of rooms of other diplomats and reporters who were there for the election watch party. So they had a strong feeling that President Trump would be could be reelected. And it's just interesting to see how they hedged against that by not even holding election watch parties. But yeah, this is just an amazing thing to see. One thing that I enjoy a lot about Election Day, and I'm not a huge like political junkie, but just to watch everyone be intensely interested in all parts of the United States. Just if you kind of step back, you realize what a country this is, like what a blessed country this is. I mean, we're talking about Miami-Dade County, and now we're talking about Cochise County, and we're talking about Waukesha and Milwaukee, and you know, what are people in Delaware feeling right now? Like it's an amazing thing what this country is, and on Election Day you see just kind of this panorama of all the different types of lands and peoples and states and counties and cities in this country. And it's just undeniable that this country is like the British Empire before it. I recently visited you there in England, mm-hmm. and really got a taste of the British Empire. Like this is a blessed country. This is a country unlike anything else in world history, as the British Empire was like nothing else in world history. And you just kind of see that on Election Day. So anyway, that's my initial thought as things are flying at us this morning. But it's definitely a big day.
And that's a great place to start. And that's kind of where we finished with Joshua as well. I will just mention as quickly that we are going out. We're live on YouTube, Rumble, and Twitter. And unlike this morning, we have our comments sorted on all three of those platforms. So if you're listening, I have them all three up here in a window. So if you have any comments, any questions for us, you can pop over to the chat on any of those channels, and we can take a look. I can pitch it over to any of our guests. So you can be involved in this show by joining in on those, and I'll try and keep an eye on that throughout there. But I mean, yeah, that I think is one of the big takeaways. Like this is America was a blessed country, but you're coming at this from a non-American. There's a message of blessing and hope in this election for the world, and not just in that. Okay, yeah, I do think Donald Trump is going to have policies that will be better for the world than Kamala Harris, and that you look at the first term, you look at how things were for Britain, Brexit, trade deals. You know, yeah, there's all of those things. But much more importantly than any of that, and much more importantly than say, well, I think Donald Trump will be better for my country because of this policy or that policy. I mean, the big takeaway from this is God rules in the affairs of men. I mean, this is what I feel like we say this every election. I've been working for the Trumpet for a few elections. We say this for good reason. We always emphasize, you know, yes, we go and vote, but God, or we don't go and vote, but yes, people go out and vote. Certainly coming as a British person, I did not vote in case anyone in case we do get this big radical left push for investigating voter fraud, which maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. There are no fraudulent ballots from me in this election. But we talk about what people vote, but ultimately God chooses who rules. And we make that point, and I think that point is so much more dramatic and impactful this morning than any other election that I've lived through. Because we did have Trump Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry forecast this event. And we sent it out, we resent it out, the Trumpet article that he wrote. We resent that out last night as our Trumpet brief, where he, if you're a long-time listener, you'll know this time 4 years ago, we were pretty surprised talking about the U.S. election coming in the next. It was a very different experience waking up because Mr. Flurry said, well, Donald Trump is going to come back. Donald Trump, like, you know, our book, America Under Attack, it goes through all of these Bible prophecies that you can see Donald Trump has already fulfilled part of, but they're not finished. And so based on that, Mr. Flurry said, well, yeah, we're going to see Donald Trump come back. And yeah, it looks to me like we're going to see Donald Trump win the 2020 election. And that didn't happen. But right away, January 2020, when Joe Biden was inaugurated, Mr. Flurry linked back to his article where he said, I think Donald Trump is going to win in 2020, and here's why. And he said, I want you to remember what I wrote in that article. I am not running away from it. What happened in America at the inauguration, when Joe Biden was inaugurated, is not the end of the story. God's prophecies in the Bible and his God prophesies in the Bible, and his prophecies are sure. However, he usually does not show us the whole picture in detail or at once. He often speaks in a coded way and only later reveals that code. And later in that article, he said, we can be sure God is going to return Donald Trump to power sooner or later. And that's what we were watching for this election. I mean, yeah, like Mr. Flurry said, we maybe don't know the details, and perhaps we didn't know precisely that we would wake up this morning and have a very clear Donald Trump victory. There are other ways that God could have chosen to fulfill this, but that's what we knew would happen. And here it is. That's the big and that's a message for the whole world, that God rules in the affairs of men, that God gives prophecy, that God reveals prophecy, and that he's working out a plan here for the benefit of all mankind, not just the United States. And so that is now what we clearly see this morning.
And I think that you make such a good point there. I was thinking going into this election about that scripture that says that the nations are a drop in the bucket, I think it is. And you know, God has seen every generation of mankind and every king, and there have been pretenders to the throne before. He's seen every intrigue and everything. And yet he is involved in detail, right? And not just in general. He's not just, you know, in general, more powerful than human beings or human nations. Like he actually gets involved in specifics. And I think that's why a lot of churches probably stay away from prophecy. You could go to church every Sunday, every week, and kind of never know that there's so much prophecy in the Bible. And it's kind of an uncomfortable thing for a lot of people to get into because it gets very specific. And I think to add to your point, you need not only to recognize there is a lot of prophecy in the Bible. Jesus Christ himself prophesied, as we often emphasize. But you need someone to explain it. It doesn't work to have everyone independently coming up with their own ideas of what it means, because like you said, it is encoded, it is encrypted, in fact. And so God uses somebody to explain that, just like he did with Moses and every prophet and every, you know, single leader that you see in the history of the Bible. So this is a moment to stop and say, okay, Mr. Flurry not only says believe in Bible prophecy, but he said that this particular scripture that could seem to mean just, you know, here's what happened in history, this is actually a prophecy. This one is, this one isn't, and this is what's going to happen. And to hold, as you say, and to hold on to that through what even he didn't expect to happen, you know, which the inauguration and duration of Joe Biden for 4 years. But to know that Donald Trump somehow is coming back, it just, I think, opens a lot of people's eyes to the fact that Bible prophecy exists. It's got to be explained by someone, and it gets very much more specific than you might think.
And I think, you know, this is, you know, one of the things we talk about on this show is just the way that Bible prophecy, like understanding Bible prophecy, it's not just academic, it's not just some extra interest or something that gives you some secret knowledge that others don't have, or like, it is very practical in terms of your life. I mean, for a lot of people, God isn't real to them. And God is more of an abstract concept. And a lot of Christians today really put their own thoughts and ideas ahead of God and the Bible, because God is a fairly abstract principle and or abstract notion. And so, well, if they have different ideas on the subjects of homosexual marriage or abortion, they listen to those ideas. And I think Bible prophecy makes God very real, and that he is involved, and that his law is real. There's cause and effect. He's intervening. And like, he's not just some distant concept, some kind of vague feeling of goodness. There is a very real, personal, involved God. And I think the other thing, and a very powerful God, and a God that works these massive miracles. I mean, one thing I've really appreciated from the Trumpet Daily Show over the last week or so is the way that Mr. Stephen Flurry has gone back over like the last 4 years. Because I think for the last year or so, there have been a ton of people that have kind of been like, yeah, Donald Trump is coming back. At least on the right. Yes, Donald Trump is coming back. He's on his way to victory. He's doing really well in these elections or in the polls. He's going to win. And it in some ways, it feels inevitable because of that. And he was going back and being and saying, well, remember the midterms a couple of years ago where all of the media was saying, nah, Donald Trump, he's a has-been. When there were a lot of Republicans saying, we need to move on. The guy's in the past. He's done. You know, even before then, in the immediate aftermath. And it was like, nope, it's over. He's going to jail. He's history. And there are so many ways that he could have been over. And we can't forget the head tilt, the bullet, the assassination attempt. I mean, Donald Trump himself acknowledged that. And I think in his speech, he talked about, well, God, he either said, well, God preserved him, or many people believe God preserved him, but something like that. So that is the biggest thing here, is to see God's hand in this prophecy. I noticed that I think Andrew's joined us. I don't know if you have anything to introduce, having heard a bit of what we've said and what you've seen, Andrew, from this morning's news.
Yeah, well, I think definitely a lot of people across America are pretty surprised, some of them pleasantly so, and some of them not so much, because this is definitely a bigger win than a lot of people were expecting. You talked about like vindicating God's prophecies, because even I was thinking, based on past election results, that Trump was going to win this election, but there were going to be probably like several weeks of recounts and challenges, and it would feel more like the 2020 election, where and what we got instead is, like, just in terms of margins, this is a bigger win for Trump than his 2016 election. He's won the presidency, he's won the Senate by a pretty good margin. I guess the House votes are still coming in, but if he's won the presidency and the Senate, you kind of see which way the wind's blowing. He's liable to win the House by a good margin as well, and become the first Republican president in 20 years to win the popular vote. The last time a Republican's actually won the popular vote in a U.S. election was George W. Bush in 2004. Every Republican president since then has actually lost the popular vote and only become president because America's Electoral College just weights the states in a certain way to where, like, the people in the right states were voting for him.
Yeah, do you want to? Sorry, you can keep going, but I'm just going to get George to put up my screen on, and we can have a look at the popular vote. If you can put my computer screen on, there we go. If you want to keep going, but there's some of the popular tally for our viewers.
Yeah, and those numbers are still coming in. Like, if you see an election map, like, we're still waiting for final numbers in Alaska, we're still waiting for final numbers in Maine and Nevada and Arizona and Michigan. So that popular vote tally is going to keep going up, but that makes it a victory even bigger than 2016, because in 2016 Trump, he won the Electoral College, but he didn't win the popular vote. And I think that winning the popular vote in this election, that's what really made all the concerns some conservatives had about, is there going to be cheating? Is there going to be rigged? It kind of made that irrelevant in the fact that those who claimed the election was rigged in 2020, there you rely a lot on, like, Peter Navarro's reports that are talking about 300 disputed ballots in 6 swing states. Not 300, 300,000 disputed ballots by 6 swing states. So in any regards, the 2020 election was very close. That's what made it so contentious, is there was only about 300,000 ballots where you're like, well, if there's some question about whether they were signed right or whether they were cast right, that number makes a big difference. In this case, Trump won, or will win, is on track to win, every single swing state in the election. So all the 6 states that people were talking about the election being rigged, the last election. Trump won in a landslide in all those six states. So whether or not there was any voter fraud in those elections, Trump is still talking about America's need to switch over to same-day paper balloting to cut down on those allegations of fraud. But whether or not there was any fraud in there, that like 300,000 ballots would have been buried under this avalanche of voters in these states that made it what conservatives call too big to rig, too big of a landslide to rig. So not necessarily saying that America doesn't need to be looking to ways to make America's election safe and secure. But if we're talking about like Trump being vindicated, God gave Trump a big enough victory that even if people tried to cheat, that the cheating would have been inconsequential compared to just the size of the victory.
Thanks for.
If I could jump in for a sec, I think that the electoral. The election system is still an absolute crisis, just like we have said before. It's completely flawed and dangerous. But as you said, there's something that just broke through even the different strategies that Democrats and others have used to try to steal votes here and there. But I wanted to go back to your comment, Mr. Palmer, about how this, you know, we've got possibly Donald Trump, on track to win a convincing victory. The Republicans on track to win the House and the Senate, a popular mandate, winning the popular vote. And to say Trump's back, and I kind of knew this was going to happen, is easy to say at this point. But I vividly remember a period shortly after the inauguration where President Trump, having had the election stolen through all those means that Andrew was alluding to just now, and leaving the White House, laid low for a while. You probably remember this too. And just wasn't in the news, wasn't in the headlines a lot. And people were talking about him a lot, but he wasn't, you know, here's what he did today. There weren't cameras on him. He wasn't making a lot of comments after the fact, as after things were dying down. And then I remember that finally he kind of, the reporters caught up with him on the golf course, and he looked tired. Throughout that period, there was this thought that, is he going to run again? Like, is he done? Like, does even he want to pursue regaining this stolen presidency or mounting a whole nother campaign to win in 2024? You know, he's getting older. He's, you know, there were all, it was very easy to be, oh, DeSantis, you know, is the new thing, or, you know, this guy or that guy is the new thing in the Republican Party. And, you know, we're in that like post Trump era now. That was a very real thing. And Donald Trump was not in the headlines very much during that, you know, mid 2021, early 2021 period. And that is when, as you say, Mr. Fleury was sticking by that somehow or another, President Trump's going to be back. And now here we are.
And I think the other fulfilled prophecy does get back to that tweet that I kind of quoted from earlier from Barack Obama, where, and this is a quote from Mr. Fleury over the summer, where he wrote that God is, quote, beginning to silence about Barack Obama. He wrote, Barack Obama's power is diminishing before our eyes. And when I woke up and kind of saw, or it might have been in the night, I saw that quote from, or that tweet, at a time that I think we'd already had the results called, or at least very nearly called. And it was just Barack Obama impotently at that point kind of crying out and saying, well, it's going to take us several days, and don't call it too soon. And at this point, the media was calling it, not that the media calls elections, of course, like, or determines the outcome, I should say, but, you know, Donald Trump had given his victory speech and all of that. It was so impotent. And it was like, yeah, that was the quote that came into my head, that Barack Obama's power is diminishing before our eyes. And that's what we saw. That's what we saw in the results of the election, in his plea to wait several days. And, you know, that didn't happen. And they weren't able to drag it out. They weren't able to have these turnarounds and anything like that. But we know that this is, we've referenced Bible prophecy throughout this. We've not spelled out exactly how the Bible prophesied that Donald Trump would come back. I mean, if you want to learn more about that, I would really encourage you to read our book, America Under Attack. I meant to grab a copy, actually, but I didn't. But that you can read on our website, thetrumpet.com, and that will take you through in a much more basic way what these prophecies say. And it will take you, right from the beginning and so help you see for yourself why Mr. Furry made this forecast that you can see before your eyes has been proven true. And you can go and you can look at that and understand why he said that. So that's a prophecy that book will take you through and show you why the Bible says that. And we've got a picture of it on the screen. We've got an even nicer hardback, bigger version of that now. And as that book explains, well, there's a spiritual war going on here. There's a spiritual dimension. So I don't think is necessarily, we might see some more drama. We might see some more events in the return of Donald Trump. I mean, where do you think we go from here? What happens over the next, between now and the inauguration? I don't know. Andrew, do you want to go first on that?
Yeah. It will be interesting to see between now and the inauguration, because the victory was big enough that it really does tie the Democrats' hands in some ways. A lot of the predictions, like, oh, there's going to be rioting and there's going to be civil unrest, was something that probably would have happened if this election could have been contested. It is so big now that I think the Democrats are going to have to pivot into trying to lay the groundwork to undermine the incoming Trump administration. Like we saw in 2016, where Trump won, Obama gave a nice speech about the peaceful transfer of power, and then they started concocting the Russia collusion hoax to set up the Mueller investigations and the impeachment scandals after Trump took office. So I fully expect it probably won't be Russia collusion hoax again, but I fully expect something like that will the Democrats will try to do to undermine the administration in the months ahead. We'll just have to wait to see what it is. That prophecy mentioned so prominently in America Under Attack in 2 Kings 14, verses 26 through 28, about Trump warring to recover. I do think there is still going to be some good legal warfare against the deep state in the days coming in ahead, especially after Trump takes the oath of office. Because when Trump came in the first time, I don't know, he's this New York real estate guy, unfamiliar with the ways of Washington. And it did seem like he kind of thought that, like, well, I won the election and now I'm the president, so I can just have a conservative revival. And he didn't realize how much he's up against. He won't make that mistake this time. And he's bringing on people like Elon Musk, who's saying things like, hey, we have over 400 government bureaucracies, and I think we should have 99. So we need to, like, do to the U.S. government what I did to Twitter and fire 80% of the employees and just downsize this. Now, I don't know if he's going to be successful at firing 80% of the employees, but these are the type of people Trump's surrounding himself with, showing that, like, if he's drain the swamp can't just be a metaphor that he uses. Like, there's big changes that he's going to have to do to get these deep state agents who really hamstrung his first administration under control. And whether it's eliminating them or replacing them, I think the Obama, you're talking about Obama being silenced. Mr. Flory made that prophecy about Obama being silenced. Well, like I said, Obama hasn't been president since 2016. So the way he's been able to exert his voice for most of the past several years is through FBI and CIA and other agents in the civil service. Now, he may be impotently calling on those agents to try to slow count the vote and then wasn't able to do that because the victory was so big. But Trump, in the months ahead, and especially after he's inaugurated, is going to have a lot to do to get those agents still working for Barack Obama either loyal to him or downsized to the point where they don't have much influence. So America does function more as the founders intended, where the president is the head of the executive branch, and we don't have this sprawling 2 million man strong civil service that operates without any accountability to anyone except Barack Obama.
So what about riots? Like, I've seen this as a big fear, and even I've also seen some this morning say, I guess the riots didn't happen. Everything has been pretty quiet and peaceful. I mean, what's your kind of take on how the American public, or perhaps it'd be a better way of putting it, would be to say the American outrage industry and you know, kind of like the BLM, greater BLM movement. Do you think we'll see a big response there? Or you know, is it too soon to say, yes, we escaped the riot problem?
Probably. Even in 2016, when the election was a pretty decisive victory for Trump, you had the Not My President protest. Now, those were not quite as violent as your George Floyd-style BLM riots. But you did still have a significant protest movement that the radical left, that protest is one of their favorite tools for political warfare. And almost assuredly, you're going to have a hashtag Not My President movement with protesters like that again. Now, in terms of the violent riots, I think what people are saying when we say we escaped the riot problem is that if this would have been a razor-thin election where there was recounts for weeks and the Supreme Court having to get involved, you would have been able to recruit more Americans to that style of rioting, potentially putting you in danger of violence. Now, now, if you see that type of style of rioting, you definitely reveal the hypocrisy of the radical left, where they've spent 4 years crying bloody murder over the protesters who trespassed on Capitol grounds on January 6th and accusing them of trying to overthrow the election. So if you see riots against Trump when the win was this big, well, anyone on earth would be able to see that it's you who are trying to overthrow the election. Still doesn't mean it won't happen, but it is less likely. It's probably, my guess would be more along the style of the Not My President protests, being that, like, well, we're moving into opposition phase now.
That's a good point. I do have here a video. This is in terms of social unrest. This is in England, where Just Stop Oil are graffitiing the U.S. embassy. So some of the civil unrest, I guess, has gotten started over here, if not in the United States. That's some of what's going on there. But I think that's what I was going to say is, again, like, we know that God is diminishing the power of Barack Obama, that he's behind the return of Donald Trump. And I guess Donald Trump himself acknowledged that. So in many ways, it's up to him. How much is he restraining that evil influence, how much. So maybe we'll see nothing. Maybe that will be kind of completely restrained. And I think you made an excellent point. In some ways, you know, kind of has God already saved America from a lot of that rioting by this being such a dramatic and comprehensive victory, rather than a narrow victory, or where Donald Trump, say, lost the popular vote but still won in the Electoral College or something like that. Though I guess with votes coming in, that could still happen. So I think that's an excellent point to bring up. But that does also, one of the points you raise, it kind of brings up my other question is, are we going to see now the left do what they have been castigating the right for doing for the last 4 years? Like, is this going to be a stolen election? Will we have Democratic congressmen refusing to certify the election? Like, do you think that is a possibility for the next couple of months?
That would definitely be a big story. And I heard some news analysts talking about that last night, is because it's the vice president who certifies the election on January 6th.
So it's Kamala Harris herself who has to certify her defeat.
So Kamala Harris has to sign the certificate saying I lost. The news analysts I heard talking about it last night were saying, it was said, well, of course she'd do that. She's like, she's not Donald Trump, who's going to try to like overthrow democracy, which was kind of a low blow at Donald Trump. That's not what they were trying to do on January 6th. They were trying to debate the evidence of election fraud. And when that process got shut down by the rioting, that just didn't happen. So I don't think anyone's expecting Kamala to not sign the document, but I mean, it is a possibility and would be a big story. That's actually kind of one of the question marks I think will be interesting to see forward, is like, how long does this radical left warfare last? Because going back to that America Under Attack booklet, which is comparing Donald Trump to an end time type of Jeroboam the Second. Now, the historical Jeroboam the Second, most Bible historians think, spent the first 11 years of his reign warring against Syria, stopping Israel from being blotted out. But that last 29, 30 years was a time of great peace and prosperity. And so Mr. Fleury, in that book, he makes the case that prophecy in 2 Kings 14, 26 to 28 about Jeroboam indicates that Donald Trump does have to war to recover the office stolen from him. And he's definitely done a bunch of, he's definitely fought a bunch against a media lawfare and political lawfare and legal lawfare, and will probably have to do some more as Democrats try to undermine his administration. But the implication is that at some point, and I don't know if this is going to be a day from now, a week from now, a month from now, a year from now, at some point he does kind of win that warfare. And there is what we call a resurgence in the United States, where it's to give the American people a chance to repent of their sins, but a time where things are actually pretty good and pretty stable in the country, without like civil war style violence and rioting and looting and all that. So there might be some of that in the short term, but in the long term, the Bible prophecy indication is that things are going to get better for a while.
I'm glad you brought that up. There's one thing I wanted to mention that I think might be interesting to watch over the next 2-3 months. And I think it will be interesting just to see what does, like, we don't do this in Britain. Like, when there's an election, the prime minister moves out of 10 Downing Street that afternoon and the new guy is in. Like, he goes to see the king. It's all done the same day. The United States, you have this period of a couple of months now where Joe Biden has no elections to worry about, has no electoral fallback. It's quite, you know, it's not like he's going to be a political force for years to come. Like, he's got no or very little in the way of legacy items to worry about. He's not going to be standing for election in 4 years' time. He is done, but he is still sitting there in the White House. I do wonder what will happen there, and even what I'm thinking of is during this period, it was when Barack Obama, let me find it. I had an article here where he came in and had the he for the first time didn't veto the UN when the UN was going to condemn Israel's settlements as being illegal. And it was kind of the first time the US had stepped back and allowed such a negative anti-Israel resolution through. And I think that was, so that was 2016. 8 years later, we're still seeing the ramifications of that. And he really set up a lot of the diplomatic persecution that Israel is facing at the United Nations by doing that. And he did that, you know, after the election, when voters couldn't punish him anymore, because voters would have really punished him for that. So I do wonder if we'll see any of that from Barack Obama. I think maybe this time next week I'll sit down with Mihailo and we'll talk about what the ramifications are for Israel in the Middle East of this election. We've talked about Europe already, but maybe we could, I think the fear of voters, if the Democrats and if Joe Biden is too negative on Israel, I think that has made them maybe a bit more sneaky about how they crack down on Israel, how they hurt Israel, how they empower Iran. How much is that going to change now that there's no election? Can they be more openly siding with Iran? But then also, how is Israel's actions going to change, knowing that they've got a strong ally coming along in the White House in a couple of months? And there's even the same prophecies that you talk about this ancient Jeroboam, this type of Donald Trump, recovering things for Israel and there being benefits there. So I think that'll be something to watch. Before we move on, I just wanted to bring Philip back in and just see if you had any comments on any of those things that we've talked about of what to look at over the next few months.
Right. Well, as you said there, this period is going to be interesting. It does seem like the Democrats and the radicals have had a lot of that power broken. A lot of things still could happen. Remember the January 5th meeting in the Oval Office with Barack Obama and Joe Biden that just undermined so much of the Trump presidency. Happened in this interregnum, right? Like happened after the election and before the inauguration. So a lot of things could happen. But I think you're really hitting on the main thing, because from basically like 2008 to now, some very unnatural things have been happening in this country. And, you know, you talked about Iran. The president of the United States was like aggressively seeking a nuclear deal with Iran that nobody wanted. Nobody, you know, this was a priority for no one. Iran, you know, is one of the greatest enemies of this nation, and he's just like bending over backwards to do that infamous deal. Things with obviously sexuality and versions just running absolutely rampant in a way that nobody was expecting or looking for. And then we talked about this a little bit in the Trump meeting about how large masses of powerful people and a fair amount of people on the street were mobilized to protest the death of George Floyd, like in other countries even and across this country, burning parts of this country. And then that same kind of block of people was moved over to, okay, now we're supporting Ukraine and we're going to fly Ukraine flags from our government buildings. Now we're going to do this. Like the mobilization of people for extreme causes, weird causes, clearly self-destructive causes, was constant throughout that period. And possibly, well, I think definitely even more so after Barack Obama was out of office and even when Donald Trump was in office, a lot of those things were happening. So you have radical people in this country. You have wild and self-destructive ideas. You have people who are afraid of being exposed for treason. You have all these kind of motivations in this country. But right now, at least right this morning, it feels a little more natural where some are trying this, some are trying that, some might try this, some might try that. But what made the difference from 2008 to now is that consolidation and that unification and the money, wherever it came from. And I think the difference is what you've been saying, and it was Barack Obama. Like, there was a power, an unnatural power, that was able to unite these things that would otherwise be pretty fractious, still factors, but, you know, they, but not able to start a movement on a, you know, some you know, someone dies and, you know, George Floyd dies. It's a tragedy, it's an issue, but it doesn't just stay in the local news. There's people in Sydney, Australia, you know, like, you know, protesting about this and people burning stuff. That whole period was unnatural. And that, you know, or even we could even get into COVID and how, you know, all that, all of that. But something was mobilizing that, those, all of those otherwise separate self-destructive things in this country. And that the power of that, or that power seems to be highly diminished. So I would expect to see some efforts at resisting Donald Trump, not my president, you know, like Andrew's saying, a little kind of weak, you know, bumper stickers on the back of cars. But I it does seem like he was the difference maker. And because he has lost his power, which I wouldn't know that except that Mr. you know, Floria said that, that's what's making the difference and will make the difference in the months ahead.
I think that's a great point. That brings us, I think, to where we can finish up, which is just talking about then, you know, going forwards beyond the next two or three months on into a Trump presidency. And I think this is where, you know, this book, I don't know how he managed to pull out of his hat so quickly, but our producer, George, ran in and handed me a copy. This is where this book is so unique and so valuable that God's intervention in this election has been so clear, so obvious. We are far from the only ones that talk about it. There are plenty of times where we find ourselves the only people talking about God's intervention in this or that and Bible prophecy, or certainly with few companions. You know, that's not true here. Donald Trump, in his victory speech this morning, he talked about, well, God has preserved me from some special purpose. This book is the only book that can tell you what that purpose is, that can tell you why. Because, you know, Donald Trump this morning said, well, it's so that we can turn America around, so that we can make America great again, and the future is going to be awesome. And, you know, I've seen the videos, you probably have too, of Elon Musk. He's got these wonderfully optimistic videos of the future is going to be awesome, and it's, Donald Trump is going to turn this around for America. And they're wonderful videos. There's a lot that's missing there. I mean, yes, the future is going to be awesome, but not because Donald Trump is now going to permanently turn around and fix America. That's not why God intervened in this election. And really, you know, we talked about Barack Obama, his power being diminished. Again, you go back to this book. One of the points Mr. Flaherty makes in this book, and made in the slim original copy of this book, is, you know, okay, yes, there's an evil spirit world, and God is allowing Satan the devil to use one man, Barack Obama, in a particularly destructive way. But Barack Obama is only able to act that way by reason of transgression, as the book of Daniel put. Like, he's only able to do that because the nation as a whole, or a huge proportion of the nation, is sinning. And, well, okay, Barack Obama's power and influence is being diminished, but the sin is still there. The sin that caused him to be able to kind of come to power, be used in that process, that is still there. And unless that changes, then we're still going to have major, like, America's not going to have this fantastic future and this wonderful turnaround. And this resurgence for Barack for America and Donald Trump coming back to the White House, and any temporary stability that may bring, it's all for the purpose of confronting that sin. And really, it's for allowing this message to go out, and for America to be stable enough and prosperous enough that this message can go out to America, so that this message can go out from America. I mean, we have offices around the world, but a lot of our headquarters and funding and support comes from the United States. It would be very hard for us to operate in this. I think this is something we could have got into this morning. The EU is becoming more and more of a clamping down on free speech. Britain wants to ban Twitter. You know, I think under Donald Trump, you could see America being a beacon of free speech to the benefit of our message and to the benefit of the entire world. But it's so that message can go out again. And if people don't repent, if the nation doesn't repent, if the nation doesn't confront its sins, it's not going to turn around. And if you, you know, okay, yes, we've got Elon Musk in there and he's going to try and reduce waste and all of that, and that's fantastic. But to turn around America's economy, you have to get back to, well, a family with a father and a mother, and where the state isn't stepping in and providing support to massive numbers of fatherless children because there's rampant divorce, there's marriage itself kind of becoming a thing that doesn't happen for, and is not relevant for most people's lives, and just all of this social destruction that then leads to crime, that leads to all of these massive expenses. You know, these are things that you need repentance to fix. And so that's the solution. So going forwards here, yeah, it may well be some wonderful things and some temporary resurgence. It's not going to be permanent unless we address that sin. And so, you know, that I think is important to note. As, and I don't mean this to be a downer. Like, this is not a, I want to rain on your parade because you're all excited and because everyone's like, yeah, the future's going to be awesome, Donald. Like, that is not this at all. Like, this is, be excited. This is about God ruling in world events, and he's intervening in world events as part of a plan that will lead to lasting peace, and that will lead, will confront sin in America and around the world, and that will then address the causes of all of mankind's problems, and will produce a world that will blow Elon Musk's mind. Like, that we will be more wonderful than anything he's imagining for America right now, and will involve space and Mars and beyond even his wildest imagination. So it is great news, but, you know, that's the perspective I think we need to bring. And that only, that book that I've hidden, America Under Attack, can kind of give you that vision behind this next term in office. I don't know if you two gentlemen have any closing statements or anything to add there.
Well, that's hard to top, but I just want to reiterate that we have a job to do. Each of us watching this unfold day after day has choices to make and a job to do. And getting Trump in there is not that didn't fix it, right? Like, that and the steps he's going to take are not going to fix the core problem. Like you said, this is a merciful intervention for the purpose of each American, each person watching this, looking at their own lives and realizing, you know, what did we just come through? What were we facing? We came up to the abyss, and that abyss is still there. I've got to change my life, and that's really the message that we need to take from this. Not just be, you know, political spectators or our team won, but we have got to realize how close we still are to the abyss, and seek that same God who can intervene in massive elections, to intervene in our lives, and honestly to show us where we're wrong. We hate to do that, but that's the whole thing that's causing the problem. So we've got to understand that this is not just a spectator sport. This is something that we've got to really take to heart.
This is not a spectator sport. That's a... I could see that being a great bit of a catchphrase for the show when it comes to talking about politics. Andrew, did you have anything you wanted to bring up as we wind down?
Yeah, I also think, I guess, as far as closing comments, this is definitely God's mercy on America, but it gives us an opportunity to evaluate our lives, especially evaluating your marriages, your family, your child rearing. Because I think I can go out on a limb here to be like, tonight's election is going to make the next 4 years in America a lot better. But then you have to get, he's like, well, what about the 4 years after that? Trump's not, can't run again in 2028. He'll be 82 years old. So it's like, who in 2028, who are the kids coming out of the American university system going to vote for? And if you think they might vote for a liberal socialist communist style politician like Kamala Harris or the next iteration of her, then we have a cultural problem in America. It's not just like, well, Donald Trump can't do all the heavy lifting forever. You've eventually have to produce a culture that generates good leaders. And so that's why our Trump editor-in-chief, Mr. Joe Fleury, calls it Donald Trump saving America temporarily. You've got a 78-year-old man who's kind of old school coming in here and doing some common sense, old school values to stabilize the nation. But it's the... Each generation tends to get more liberal, and if America doesn't reverse that trend and start raising children to actually make wise, virtuous, character-based decisions, then this definitely will be saving America temporarily, just long enough until the elder generation dies off and the new kids coming out of the universities takes over.
Well, that's a great place to end, I think, from both of you on, well, what can we do? What can you do? Looking at ourselves, politics is not just a spectator sport. What we've seen this morning isn't just something, yeah, okay, be excited about it, but use it as a catalyst for change as well. And use it to see God in the world, in your life, to bring him to life, make him more real, and... then if God is more real to you and has a purpose, well, then get busy changing your life to do and to live your life the way that he wants you to. Well, thank you so much, both gentlemen, for joining us. This is our second ever live show. The first ever one was this morning. The training wheels are off. The net is out from underneath the tightrope. There's been no do-overs. Nope, oh, I said that wrong, or I've forgotten where I'm going with this. Let's rewind. But it's been a whole lot of fun. So glad that you could join me. This book, America Under Attack, we've mentioned that quite a few times for good reason. If you have not read that, you can go to our website, thetrumpet.com, and you can read it all online there. Just click on the literature tab. It'll be quite easy to find. You can read it there. You can download a free copy. You can order your own copy. We will send you this, you know, very nice hardback copy that's got all the latest text and everything in there so that you can understand that for yourself. If you have any questions, any comments, any suggestions about more live shows and what you might like to see from live shows going forward, timing, how regular, anything like that, we'll take that in mind, or any questions, troubles ordering this book, you can email us at trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com. Thank you so much to George Haddad and Isaac Lorenz. It's certainly more pressure on the guests when you're live. It's more pressure on our producer and our tech guys as well, but we really appreciate their efforts. We'll be back with a much more standard, our standard Week in Review show on Friday. Until then, keep watching your world.